Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman, and I've invited Heidi Moore, the U.S. business editor for The Guardian, to join me. Hi, Heidi.
Hi.
And the reason why I asked you in here is you are perhaps one of the most prolific social media users that I know. You're constantly on Twitter. At least I see a lot of tweets from you. You're in a lot of conversations. You're sending out stories that other people are working on. You're on Facebook a lot. And I know that at the same time, you're also doing editing. You're also doing your own writing and reporting. But the thing that really stands out to me the most is that whenever I'm with you, whether it's professionally or even socially, you're able to like focus and not, you know, pick up your phone and check email. Like when we're talking, how do you find that balance between being distracted and still being really socially engaged in the world?
Well, I think that there are two ways to think about it, right? There's the mechanical way, and then there's the psychological way or the philosophical way. And so the mechanical way is, you know, you get yourself an awesome calendar and you learn how to make the world's best to-do list. You follow Atul Gawande's rules on making, you know, the checklist manifesto. You have all of your processes worked out.
So what is the checklist manifesto?
When we do to-do lists, we focus on completing tasks. The checklist manifesto is essentially you create checklists for everything that you do each day. So it focuses on process. And so that way, when you finish parts of a task, because very often we have projects that will go on over days or even weeks, then you check off those parts of the task. But you can also share the checklist with members of your team. And so, for instance, when you're flying a plane, there are checklists for pilots. And one of the emergency checklists has as its first rule, keep flying the plane, because that's what people forget to do when there's a crisis. And I think that that's very revelatory of how we spend our lives too. So I always think about that throughout the day. Things will come up, distractions will come up, keep flying the plane. And so philosophically, what that means is that when I think about the way that I allot my time, I think about it just like money. When you spend money on something, it shows that you value that thing. Even if you think it's something small, something stupid even, if you've spent money on it, it means it's important to you. And time is the same thing. And so very often, we spend our time doing nothing or, you know, bored or in ways that we wouldn't want to. And what I do is I try to rein myself in and say, if I'm spending my time that way, it's a reflection of my inner self. What do I want to spend my time on to show what I actually value in life? And so people say, for instance, they value work, but then they don't spend very much time at work. They value their family, but then they spend no time with their family. So your time has to be spent according to what your real priorities are.
How are you able to balance a lot of those different competing interests? And at the same time, you know, keep in mind that when you're sitting across from me right now talking, you're not reaching over to your phone. Like I have this instinctual desire right now to pick up my phone and just check Gmail. I don't know why.
Each thing I do, I actually focus on. And so when I'm reading Twitter or when I'm reading Facebook, I'm looking for news and I'm focusing on what is news, what can I use, what can I throw away. It's a constant process of forming judgments. And with every task we do, you should be learning what is good, what is right, what should I be doing, as opposed to devoting all of your time is into jumping into this giant swimming pool of chaos.
Well, Heidi, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Heidi seems to have figured out how to focus on the things she values without being distracted by all the noise in the background. But how do we figure out what's important?
Hello, this is Greg here.
That's Greg McKeown.
It sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
He's the author of one of the top business books of 2014, Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. After we got through some technical difficulties,
it was hurting my soul.
We finally got going on the interview, and we had a lot to talk about. But first, I had to ask him, what exactly is essentialism?
Well, essentialism is the antidote to what I think is really a huge problem today for people. And the problem is that people everywhere feel overworked and underutilized. They feel stretched too thin at work and at home. They find that at the end of the day, their email inbox is longer than it was at the beginning, as well as their to-do list. And so really, it's the antidote to a problem, and the problem I call non-essentialism, which is a long word for a simple idea, really, which is that we've been conned.
Conned in what way?
Well, we've been conned with the idea that if we can fit it all into our schedules, then we can have it all in our lives. But really, that isn't what happens. And people end up, what really happens is they're stressed, they aren't sleeping properly, their productivity plateaus or even starts to go down, and they're making only a millimeter progress in a million directions. And so essentialism is really the other view, the other way of approaching our lives.
So then what are the first steps to try and get to that point where you accept that maybe you can't have it all?
Well, I think that one of the first steps is to see, you know, how conned we have been. So, I mean, in my own life, for example, I remember that I was conned by this idea in a pretty serious personal situation or mistake. I received an email from my boss at the time saying, look, Friday is a very bad time to have a baby. And my wife was expecting one of our daughters at the time. And Friday was the due date. And as it turns out, our daughter was born on Friday. And I was there for the birth. But instead of being able to be focused on this, you know, most important moment and to be undistracted and present, I really was trying to straddle both requests. And I was trying to work out how can I do both. And so I was picked up from the hospital and taken to the meeting. I went, to my shame. I'd made a fool's bargain. And what I learned from that experience was that if you don't prioritize your life, then someone else will.
Why do you think it's so hard for us to not be able to say no more easily?
We have been taught you can do it all. You can say yes to it all. And if you really can do it all, then you probably should say yes to everyone, because that's what a good person would do, a good team player would do, a good citizen would do. But it's just nonsense.
Is there a danger that by saying no and trying to focus on some essentials you've identified, that maybe perhaps you may not have found out that there's a particular skill you're really good at, or maybe you said, no, I don't want to work on this project, or no, I'm not going to sign up for this class, and it turns out that is the thing that might change your life?
Yeah, so what you are peddling there, Charlie, is the fear of missing out. I totally recognize, I mean, that is a real phenomenon for people.
You feel me resisting the impulse to give up things in my life.
Yes, I think that's probably right. But what you have to learn, that's not just the fear of missing out, what we need to learn is the joy of missing out. So a manager at Twitter put it to me. They said, do you remember what it was like to be bored? Which I thought was ironic because they're the ones that did it to us.
Well, since we're talking about boredom right now, let's go down that road a little bit. How important do you think it is to take steps to make sure that we are bored, that we are not constantly engaged with the world around us?
Look, this is enormously important. Now, I have children. If the children ever say they're bored, we say it's good. We want you to wrestle with that boredom, because at the edge of boredom is all creativity. You know, when you have to ask the questions, well, what should I be doing right now? What's the next thing? And what would be interesting to me? And what's going on in the world? And so really, you know, people think that the hard thing to do about essentialism is saying no. And I understand that because of the social awkwardness implied in that. But really, it's not the key. The hard work is to create space in our lives and to allow it to be there, allow ourselves to be bored, allow ourselves not to be connected, get out into nature.
So give me some very specific tips for people who'd be listening about how to eliminate or how to figure out what is the non-essential in my life and what is essential.
Well, there's such low-hanging fruit on this. One thing that someone can do is simply make a list every day as they're leaving work, let's say, and identify what are the six things I'm going to do for tomorrow. Write them down, prioritize the order, and then cross off the bottom five. Now, you keep the list and you keep those five things, but you just take that first item and you schedule for the next day a 90-minute work cycle that is totally on that. And that's like war room type of focus. You don't do anything else. You focus on that. You've got to be asking the big questions of where do I want to be 5 years from now? What are the three goals I want to achieve for the next 5 years? What are the three goals I want to achieve for the next 1 year? And then finally, what are the three goals I want to achieve over the next 90 days? And it's important, too, because this problem of not spending our life on the things that are most important are absolutely the stuff that life regrets are made of. Bronnie Ware, the Australian nurse, the one who wrote the piece and then the book, The Five Regrets of the Dying, identified that the number one regret of the dying is that people lived a life pulled into everyone else's opinion of what they should be doing instead of living the life that was true to the voice within them. That's the number one regret.
One of the things you talk about in your book is trying to set and create this agenda that you're talking about right now, but that's made up also of trade-offs, of things that you have to give up and things that you keep as well. You even liken it to looking at your closet and cleaning it out.
Well, the closet metaphor is so important, actually, Charlie. What is your closet like? If we were looking at your closet, what would we see?
Well, you'd see when it's organized, which I think anybody here would say that that is a reflection of my personality. There are a lot of shirts that I'm trying to figure out. Do I really want these shirts? Am I really going to wear these shirts? I've winnowed some of them down, but I think I could probably get rid of some more.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. The very fact that you have an organized closet alone, that never happens on its own. Now, the second thing, now you're saying I've made some progress, but I've still got some things in there that I'm not sure about. So the key here is to change the criteria. If our criteria is, well, do I like it? Well, then it stays on, stays in the closet. If we ask ourselves, well, will I ever wear it again sometime? Maybe. Then it stays on in the closet. We have to change our criteria to a more extreme question. For example, do I absolutely love it? Or does it spark joy? And if the answer is no to this, then we eliminate it. We make room for something better. Now, we're not talking about closets literally, although I do think it applies. We're talking about the closet of our lives, where it's even more complicated because in the closet of our lives, people are stuffing their clothes into our closet every single day. So therefore, we need a really extreme criteria. And the criteria that I would recommend is what I call the 90% rule, which basically says that if you're not 90% sure about pursuing something, just don't bother. Don't worry about it.
Now, a lot of that is about taking back choice and making smart decisions about what really gives you joy, what you want to do. But oftentimes, especially in the workplace, you may not have as much choice. And I'll give an example. I remember one time in a previous job, a boss calling me up when I was on the road driving, and he said, "Have you ever wanted to go to Jamaica?" And I said to him, "Is this a trick question where there's really only one answer to this question?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, how did you know that I wanted to go to Jamaica? I've always wanted to go there." Sometimes when you're asked to do something at work, you're not really being asked, you're being told, and the only answer is yes. So how do you deal with those situations?
What I have found is that the best essentialists never use the word no, but they have a whole repertoire for being able to negotiate. For example, they can say, "Look, I'm very happy to do what you're just asking me to do, but let me talk about what I'm currently doing and make sure that this is the very best use of me and will get you the very best thing that you're looking for."
There's one other point in your book that my reaction to it maybe is more reflection on how I'm just torn in a lot of different directions, and I'm an exact example of what you're talking about. But you write that we live in a world where almost everything is worthless and very few things are exceptionally valuable. It still felt a little bit depressing to read that because I thought there's so many other things out there in the world worth exploring, and sometimes you got to stretch yourself and try and do more if that's at all possible to do. You may not be able to have everything, but isn't it worth trying to strive to have a little bit more than what's in front of you?
Yes, but you're totally confusing the points here, if I might put it that way.
Please.
It's not about just doing what's in front of you. It's about being so selective that you have space to do the things that are absolutely fabulous, that are amazing, that are breakthrough experiences. It's making sure that we aren't so quick to say yes to the first thing, say yes to a good thing, that we have no room to even look for the great thing. What is the most valuable thing that I could do? What's the very best holiday that I can go on that will make the best memory for me, for my children? It's these things. And so what I think is that if you just do the things in front of you, you will be pulled into all the good stuff, but miss out on the great stuff.
Final question. If you achieve this state of essentialism, if you achieve this state where you're able to, really set the right priorities and not be distracted by everything that could pull you away from what really is important in your life, how does that feel? How do you know that you've achieved that place?
There's nothing to compare to what you're describing. When you feel that sense of alignment, I am doing the right thing for the right reasons at the right time, Every one of us has experienced the opposite, where we're stressed out, where we're strained, when we know we're forcing things, we're trying to get it all fit in, and we just know we can't. We've all had that. Maybe we all have it every day at some level. But we've also had the other moment where we've paused, we've breathed, we've thought about it, and we've said courageously, I need to be doing something else. This is the thing I ought to be doing, and doing it. And I really think that essentialism is all talk. Prioritization itself is all talk until we've said no to something really good.
Greg, thank you very much.
Thank you ever so much, Charlie.
Greg McKeown is the author of Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less, and he's also a regular contributor to the Harvard Business Review. Being an essentialist means saying yes to only the most important things. And according to Greg McKeown, if a little bit of boredom creeps in, well, that's a good thing for creativity and overall mental health. But today's technology goes out of its way to keep us from being bored. Our phones offer us information and entertainment on demand 24/7. So how do you get and stay bored among all the beeps and buzzes and blinking lights of the modern world? Well, I think I've got, if not the answer, an answer, courtesy of, well, I'll let her introduce herself.
Hello, Manoush Zamarodi, host of WNYC's New Tech City.
And Manoush, you have this campaign that's going on right now called Bored and Brilliant. What exactly is this?
Okay, so what this is it's a challenge that we are doing the very first week of February. But really, people will be able to take this challenge anytime. And the idea is that for 1 week, you are going to get every day a task, a mission, something to get you rethinking your relationship with your phone, maybe even putting it down, and then going into this place of boredom, maybe mind wandering, daydreaming, which is where scientists, neuroscientists say some of our most original thinking, our problem solving, our novel ideas come from. And so for me, we came to the idea of this project because I sort of was thinking, you know, I've been looking at my phone for 7 years now. I'm never bored. Is that a good thing? Or a bad thing? And it turns out it might be indeed a bad thing.
How are you going to get people to try and break that habit? Because I find that even when I'm doing interviews like this, the phone is near me. It's on silent, but I find myself wanting to just reach over and just start checking things.
Well, that's the thing, Charlie, is I think for a lot of us, it's become a reflex, right? It's not even – it's like people have been describing it to us. We have thousands of people have signed up for this. And to hear them describe it, one guy described it as a binky. Like soothing
right.
to him.
Right.
Another
The adult binky,
a fifth limb for sure. It's something that you, like you say, you just reach for automatically. I mean, I'll be walking down the street and have it in front of my face and I'm like, I don't even remember opening it up and looking at my phone. What am I looking for?
And also, like, what are you seeing around you or not seeing around you by always being on the phone?
Completely. And I want to be totally clear that this is not a tech is bad sort of campaign at all. To me, it's more about how can we use this technology thoughtfully, purposefully, so that we get out of it what we want instead of, I think a lot of people feel, that their phone is in charge of their day.
So
we have choices here.
So what's a challenge that you have?
Okay, so for example, the very first day is called put it in your pocket. So when you are in transit that day, whether you are, you know, standing on the train platform or you are walking down the street, keep your phone in your pocket.
Don't pull it out.
Do not pull it out. Because you know those people that you get stuck behind, you're walking behind them and you're like, why is this person walking so slowly?
But how do you do that? Because I mean, I put it in my pocket, but there's still that, I mean.
Well, we think that the fact that it's, first of all, it's not self-imposed. You're doing it because it's an assignment.
Right.
There are thousands of people who you know will be doing it with you at the exact same time. And it's one day. One single day, we think.
How long can you go? Just one day without reaching for it.
Exactly.
Is it part of the issue that it's not the technology, but it's the way that we interact with it? Greg McKeown talks about this idea of make your phone boring, like do things to your phone, like take apps off of it, maybe even go to the extreme of taking email off your phone. That's what the issue is. It's not the technology itself.
Well, that's interesting because one of our other challenges is actually called Delete That App, where we're asking you, again, just for the day, to take off the app that is giving you sort of that app that you can't stop tapping. So for me, I'm ashamed to admit, it's a game that I really have noticed. Like,
What's the game?
It's called Two Dots.
Okay.
It is my scotch and soda. It is how I relax. To the point, though, where I am jonesing to play it. Like,
is it like Tetris that when you close your eyes, you can see
you start
the pieces?
To see it. Yeah. I'm connecting the dots completely. So, you know,
I find myself as you're telling that I want to go download it actually.
Well, what's your app? Don't do it, by the way.
Probably the New York Times, that I'm just constantly like reading stories in there.
So maybe there's a way. Like, I think for a game like this, there's not really any redeeming qualities, frankly. So goodbye, right? Hopefully, I'm going to try.
Right.
But with the New York Times, is there some way that you could hack it? That maybe you only allow yourself to look at that app between 8:30 and 9 a.m. and any of the articles you didn't get a chance to read, you forward them to yourself to read later so that you don't feel that you have to keep checking. I mean, you're a news guy, so that's a habit that, you know, it's hard to put that away because it's part of work as well. But
what's the end goal? Is it to have a better relationship with your smartphone, or is it to find these little pockets of not always being engaged?
Well, we're saying that the end goal really is that each person have, I hope, at least one wild, crazy thought, that they think about something or they solve a problem. It could be anything, like a coworker that maybe you just feel like, God, I just cannot get through to her. Maybe you think of a way that you could do it in an unusually. Maybe you decide, I'm going to surprise her with something. Or maybe it's like your kids having trouble in school. Instead of just bemoaning it, you come up with a creative answer, a way of helping them. It could be something as small as that. It could be a meal that you decide you want to cook. It could be as big as your next business idea, something you decide to dedicate your life to. But the idea is, like, give yourself a chance to space out, to let your brain go and make connections that it doesn't get a chance to do when it has this little screen in front of it. And it can be small, it can be big, but it's worth giving yourself that time.
Find the space to space out.
Exactly.
And if we want to sign up, what do we do?
Ah, glad you asked. NewTechCity.org/board.
Okay. Manush Zomaroni, host of WNYC's New Tech City. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure, Charlie.
Finding the balance between being distracted and focused, being bored and engaged, it's practically a full-time job. So let me end here with a final suggestion from Greg McKeown about how to figure out what matters most.
Essentialism is about exploring 10 things, but saying no to 9 of them so that you can do one thing truly superbly well. It's a disciplined pursuit of less but better.
I still find myself wanting to dabble a little bit here and there, try some new things, but I think he's right. It is about setting priorities and knowing what's really essential in your life. How do you focus on the important stuff? Let us know. Send an email to moneytalking@wnyc.org. We'd love to hear from you. I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.